Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. Now, here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week, we'll discuss Washington's budget fight with AFGE National President John Gage and properly caring for our nation's veterans with National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox. We'll also learn about AFGE Local 3258 member Mark Butler's book to help veterans gain employment in the federal government.
Joined now by John Gage, AFGE's National President. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jason.
So we have a lot happening in Washington these days, especially around the budget fight. Tell us the latest on that.
Yeah, this has been a hell of a year. I've been so happy with it I could slap somebody. But federal employees, again, are right in the crosshairs. Last week, for instance, I was really stunned to see the leadership of the Republican Party come out and say that to pay for the extending of the payroll tax holiday for another year, that they proposed freezing federal pay for another 3 years and cutting a couple hundred thousand federal jobs. This is, I think it's hypocrisy at its worst. I mean, the idea of the payroll cut is to put some money in the pockets of the average American family, but forcing middle-class workers, federal employees, to pay for it is, I just can't understand it. We went into action very, very quickly on this. There was a full-page ad in Politico titled "Explain It to Me, GOP," and we picked some lawmakers. For instance, Dean Heller, who is from Nevada, Senator Heller, has put up a bill, a freestanding bill, pretty much saying the same thing. As I said, 3 years of a pay freeze and a hiring freeze and a few other draconian measures. And the ad basically says the nurse, a picture of a nurse saying, "Explain to me, Senator Dean Heller, how cutting jobs and freezing wages of nurses at the VA Southern Nevada healthcare system helps the economy in Las Vegas." And we've fashioned these right on down the line. Our locals are running these ads out there in particular congressional districts. For instance, in Pennsylvania, there's an ad running. It's "Explained to me, Representative Lou Barletta, how cutting jobs and freezing wages of defense workers at Toby Hanna Army Depot helps the economy in Pennsylvania." So we're trying to take this fight right to them, that we're not going to be doormats. We're not going to be walked over without a fight. And really, we're trying to tell our membership, as well as other working people, just what the GOP is doing. I mean, I feel it's very irresponsible what they're doing. I mean, it just really is a wrecking ball into the civil service and the federal government.
As a former federal employee yourself, and now someone who fights for the rights of current federal employees, what goes through your mind when you see these attacks on federal workers?
Really, anger. I don't think the public really understands what the federal government is or what it does. And I think I brought up on the show before the some of the studies that we've done where people are asked, "Should we cut Washington?" Yeah, cut. But when they say, "Well, how about the VA nurse in your community?" "Oh, no, don't cut her." "How about a Border Patrol agent?" "Oh, no, don't cut them." It's almost as if the people really don't understand that the federal government is in their hometowns doing absolutely critical jobs at very reasonable salaries, and that I tell you, we're just trying to get federal employees to wake up a little bit, that if we're going to sit back, especially in the next several months, we're going to see drastic changes to jobs, to agencies, to programs, and I really don't think that's what the public wants. We have to be stewards of good government. We have to stand up and defend our programs. We have to make sure that the public understands the work that we do, and we're just not going to sit by and say, "Well, here's a take a 20% cut," and which just hammers really important agencies, especially those agencies that have workers, VA, DOD, Social Security, and I think that we have a song to sing here, and our union is out there. Just last night, I was talking to a number of Democratic leadership, from Pelosi to on down, about, you know, we really don't want to see the president or the Democrats compromise on this payroll tax extension by putting any additional hits to federal employees in there. And I think they're going to stand up for us, but at least that's what we're lobbying hard for.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with John Gage, AFGE National President. President Gage, when you go down agency by agency and see some of the proposals that are being made to cut workforce, to cut service delivery, what is that impact ultimately on the American people?
Well, it's a very shrill attack. They make no bones about it. They want to wipe out the EPA, for instance, because of, you know, regulations that the EPA is making for the environment. Department of Labor getting hit pretty hard. So it's almost like some of the agencies are targeted simply because people don't like their mission, never liked their mission. So I'm concerned that certain agencies will be hit a lot harder than others. And, of course, we're walking right into this December 16th date, which is the date for, here we go again, another government shutdown. It appears that there has been progress on an omnibus spending bill, but I'll believe that when I see it. It's hard to believe that there won't be another, you know, dual OK Corral with the president trying to extend the tax cut and keep the government open, and I think the Republicans will try to merge those two issues, and we'll see what happens. But obviously this is not a way to run a country or not a way to run a government. These things really hurt. You can see morale. I see morale in the federal government going down. A lot of people are just, you know, scratching their heads about it. And, of course, we have the sequestration, however that's going to play out. That really, really whacks DOD. Half of the $1.1 trillion is supposed to come out of DOD, which is a pretty big hit. But it was good to see Speaker Boehner just allude that, well, these agencies are pretty much to the bone. And I was happy to hear that. Where some of the other freshmen, you know, congressmen are just, you know, continue wacky, disable, dismantle, I don't think that's very responsible. Contracting out's another issue we've had a success with. We've got it included in there to cap contractor salaries. People may not know it, but you know, a federal employee is capped at what, about $174,000, something like that. And contractors, though, can and do make up to over $700,000 for an individual. And we helped put a clause in to the authorization bill to cap contractor pay, I believe it was $400,000. But the amount of money that this has been scored at is staggering. For instance, if the contractors would be capped at $200,000, the taxpayers would save $57 billion over 10 years. That's a large chunk of change there, and it shows you the extent and the amount of money going into contracting. The other thing that we're seeing, and that we're really drawing a line in the sand, is the agencies are putting on their own FTE freezes, for instance, DOD. But contractor money is just it's the money that is to be cut by 10% or whatever it is. But we're starting to see some agencies, and I guess they feel they don't have any other recourse, but starting to do these things called direct conversions, taking functions of the federal government and rolling them right to contractors, either by extending contracts or and it's illegal. We have caught a couple of them, and the DOD's credit, they pulled back. But we're doing a white paper, our union is, on this issue. The agencies are supposed to come up with their report on insourcing work by the end of December. I'm sure they'll miss that date. But We've gone around and interviewed a number of agencies on this insourcing, and it's amazing that the agencies we're saving money by insourcing work that they're finding out through just putting some accountability onto the amount of money and the amount of contracts that are out there that they can save up to 30% in using federal employees, rather than contractors. But that whole initiative, which we think is really a tried and true way to save money, is definitely going to be put on the back burner, because now we're just going to be facing these wholesale cuts and any type of actions to insource work. I just think, even though it's been successful this past year, I don't think we're going to see a real increase or a focus on that.
You had mentioned that Speaker Boehner acknowledged that agencies are cut to the bone. Obviously, AFGE has proposed a number of fixes to key agencies to improve them, make them better. What kind of response do you get whenever you tell people through studies that you could save the federal government up to $57 billion with some of these proposals?
Well, it opens people's eyes. It does. But we've been fighting, carrying this battle on contractors for a long time. And just kind of turned the corner with the Obama administration focusing on insourcing and also getting in this accountability that that agencies are at least to compile an inventory of the contracts that are out there. That goes a long way when people see the amount of money that's involved. People think, well, the federal government's too big. I think there's some almost 2 million federal employees. Well, there's 6 million contractors. I think that's generally unknown. And I'm not saying the contractors, do away with all contractors. Of course not. They are needed in many functions that the government has to perform. But when there is an inherently governmental function, or when it's obvious that the tasks can be performed better by federal employees, I mean, that's what you have to keep that work in-house. And it really is it's an avenue for abuse, that a lot of these contracts, well, let's just say that there's a propensity for politics involved and campaign contributions and contracts awarded and no-bid contracts and, a lot of ways around things. Now, we've got a moratorium on contracting out on A-76 is what I mean, on doing the contracting studies. And we're hoping the Obama administration, we're working hard at OMB to have them to continue that until they really can come up with a fair process on the A-76 one. It's not slanted. And hopefully that will curtail some what I feel is, in this budget-cutting year, an avenue that agencies will seek just to increase contracting out.
You've mentioned a number of instances where you've worked with legislators on Capitol Hill, agency heads throughout the federal government. How do you feel AFGE's relationship is now working with agency heads, with legislators on these key issues, as opposed to maybe 4 or 8 years ago?
Well, there's some successes and there's some failures. TSA is a big failure. I mean, it's are pretty much, we were successful in organizing the transportation security officers this past summer. We won a huge election, and trying to move toward their first contract, even though Mr. Pistol, the administrator, by an incredible law that the TSA is under, is able to set the scope of bargaining, which he said it is very limited. The morale at TSA, again, is at rock bottom 6-7 years in a row. And I think a lot of that has to do with the management style. It's very paternalistic. Things go wrong. Well, it sure goes downhill. Officers don't feel that management has their backs, and that especially in dealing with the public and a lot of charges that are really unwarranted, and the officers are just doing their jobs. But that particular agency, even though I think it's the workers are incredibly talented and do a tough job, their pay is the worst in the government. They are not paid as other law enforcement federal employees are. They're not under the GS system. In fact, the system they're under is absolutely fraught with abuse. It makes no sense. The employees hate it. The president himself promised these people that they would be able to have some rights, they would be able to have a union, and that things would get better, and they sure haven't.
As you look ahead to 2012 in the work that AFGE is doing, what excites you the most?
Well, I think that this is going to be a hell of a political year, and I also sit on the executive committee of the AFL-CIO, and there is a lot of planning and fights all over the country. For instance, Ohio with AFG, it was a state, the state unions there asked me that we sent people and money in to fight and repeal Governor Kasich's really terrible laws that he put out. Going back into Wisconsin to try to recall the governor there. But around the country, there are 870-some bills, whether it's county, state, federal government, that have been proposed restricting workers' rights, taking away union rights, reducing health care, reducing retirement. And the AFL is really on a is the only one out there who is protecting, you know, worker rights up and down the line, even fighting for, unemployment insurance or unemployment benefits and minimum wage, all the things that really raise wages in this country. And this past 10 years, this depression on wages and benefits is horrifying. And we have our work cut out for it, but I think that there's a new sense of unity. I think that all the unions understand that it is us, the labor movement, who has to step into that breach and beat this back. So there's a real sense of renewal, even though we see what we're up against. There's been some really good planning and some really good effort, particularly Ohio. And I think the labor movement is ready to fight. So this year is clearly going to be a political year for federal employees and for our union particularly. I mean, we have all these flashpoints when the government runs out of money and the appropriation bills, and each one we seem to get hit again and again and again. I'm tired of losing. I'm tired of being bullied, really, by, we'll shut down the government if you don't, whack off a couple hundred million here, a couple hundred million there. It was a tough year last year. I think this year is going to be tougher. But when the going gets tough, you know the old saying, and I feel that we have a lot of allies in the labor movement. We have a lot of friends on the Hill, and we just have to fasten our chin straps, and federal employees got to get into the fray.
AFGE National President John Gage, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jason.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox will discuss key issues at the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more, visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. Joined now by J. David Cox, AFGE's National Secretary Treasurer. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jason. Glad to be back.
As AFGE closes out 2011, what are some of your proudest accomplishments of the union this year?
Well, obviously, I think one of the highlights for AFGE in 2011 was winning the TSA election. That's 44,000 people that now have a union, that are now going to have rights in the workplace, that are now moving forward. And that was a nine-year battle with the previous administration saying these people will never have a union, never have collective bargaining. We have accomplished that. They've elected AFGE. We're now moving forward with a contract. There's many battles to still be fought with TSA, but the bottom line, that was a very large accomplishment.
When you look back at the nine-year battle, you look back at all the work that it took to secure that win, what does it mean for you personally as someone who has dedicated his life to the labor movement?
To me, it means a lot, because while unions were being beat upon in Wisconsin, Ohio, other places throughout the country, while government employees, be it state, city, county, whoever, federal employees, were being scapegoated for the problems of this country, 44,000 federal workers had the right to choose to have a union and chose AFGE. That was a big moment. And I might add, during that 9 years, while that campaign was going on, AFGE continued to organize in other areas. AFGE continued to grow with its membership. Within the last 5 or 6 years, we've increased over a 50,000 net gain, which is unbelievable to have increased that much in membership when we have entirely open shops. Everybody in AFGE chooses to voluntarily join the union and chooses to voluntarily pay union dues.
A 50,000 member over 50,000 net gain. What does that mean to labor? What message does that send to people on Capitol Hill when they find out that AFGE is adding so many people to its membership?
Well, obviously, to some on Capitol Hill, I think it sends a message that they are afraid of us, and that's one reason that they're beating up on us. They want less federal employees, that they don't want to pay federal employees properly. They want to abolish retirement, health insurance, those type things, that they don't want the best and the brightest working for the federal government, and that they don't want public-spirited people choosing the government as a career and to be public servants. To others, I think that it sends a message that unions are alive and well. AFGE continues to grow. AFGE continues to be out there fighting on the behalf of its members, and AFGE is carrying a positive message and is one of the leading unions in all of the labor business and in AFL-CIO.
How will AFGE go about its business in 2012, continuing to organize workers?
We are definitely going to continue to organize. We are seeking out employees now who have come forward and saying, hey, I want rights in the workplace. I want my say in the workplace. I want to be represented by AFGE. We've just won an election at the Heinz VA in Chicago. It was a unit of about 600 to 700 professional employees, doctors, therapists, dietitians, social workers, psychologists, a very large group of professional employees that stepped forward and voted for AFGE.
How does that make you feel to see new members within your own home agency running to AFGE and joining?
I'm ecstatic. I always like to organize. The day I joined the union was a day that will go down just like the day that I got married, the day that my children were born. The big events in my life, and joining AFGE was a big event in my life. And AFGE has always been there for me, and it's been there for hundreds of thousands of other workers through their career.
Talk about the work that goes into organizing employees, organizing workers to become union members at a place like the Heinz VA in Illinois.
First off, there's got to be an interest of the workers themselves. You just can't go in and say, hey, you need a union, and let's start the process. Workers have to step forward. Workers have to start seeking out. yes, we want a union. Yes, we want to have collective bargaining. We want rights in the workplace. There has to be conversations with other workers. There's got to be an internal committee formed. People have to want a union. They have to show initiative and to bear a great deal of the responsibilities. AFG will certainly go out, assist them, help gather signatures, do all the things to properly educate people, but the workers themselves have to take the initiative.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with J. David Cox, AFGE National Secretary Treasurer. J. David, the VA is faced with an uphill battle right now in caring for some of its mental health patients. What's happening there with the access to getting the care that they need?
There continues to be an access problem, and part of it is even with the VA having increased resources, there is still not enough resources. We are generating more and more veterans every day. And with the war in Iraq, you know, de-escalating and winding down, there's more and more active military coming home, being discharged from the military. So there's more veterans. As I've said before on the programs, I believe it is impossible for any human being to be in a war zone and to not have problems with PTSD, that the mind just can't operate and live in that type of an environment. So the access is very, very important. It's still limited because there is limited resources. And it's important that veterans not have to wait. When people are suffering with PTSD and other emotional mental health issues, they need treatment right away. It's just like having a heart attack or an accident and you're bleeding. These people need help. They need help immediately, and it's important that be out there for folks.
Not treating post-traumatic stress disorder or traumatic brain injury in a timely fashion, what's the danger there?
There's always the danger. I mean, I think the worst thing could happen. You could have suicide. You could have other things that could happen. The person's health emotionally, mentally, and physically impaired and can be impaired for the rest of their lives. It's just like somebody who is bleeding, the loss of blood will eventually cause brain damage. Mental health issues can hurt people, and it is a very real illness, and it's an illness that needs a proper treatment.
And do you see that as something that contributes to the homeless veterans problem that we're facing in this country?
There are many, many veterans on the street, and a high, high percentage of all homeless people in this country are veterans. And it doesn't take much. If you walk down the streets of D.C., you recognize and understand that these people are suffering from mental illness. They need appropriate and proper help. And the VA has done a great job in outreach and trying to provide care. And part of the illness is people not wanting to receive care. We have to understand that. And the VA does a great job. I would never say that the VA is not the finest health care system, institution in this country. However, the VA continues to suffer from the neglect and resources, and Congress still, while they have done a much better job, do not appropriate enough money and resources to provide all the care that veterans need.
You spent your entire career working in the VA. As you look back and then see where we are now, how has care evolved for veterans over that time?
It's evolved that when I first went to work for the VA, the health care system was basically a medical center, all inpatient treatment. There were very few outpatient clinics, no community-based outpatient clinics. People had to travel great distances for care, all of those type things. The system was transformed, and I certainly commend Dr. Ken Kaiser, who was the person that led that charge to transform the VA to more of an outpatient health care system, where there was clinics, where there was care readily available, at greater access, where people didn't have to drive long distances, those type things. So I've seen a true transformation in the VA healthcare system from what it was the day that I went to work there.
Contracting out is an issue that has touched all corners of the federal workforce, and the VA has not been immune to that. What's the latest on contracting out at the VA?
Contracting out continues to be a very large issue. I just met this week with our National VA Council, who's lobbying on the Hill, talking about contract issues. A lot of contract nursing care, RNs, LPNs, nursing assistants, they're just hired for the day. They're not people there for a career that take care of these veterans on a daily basis and learn what's going on with them and develop that relationship that's needed many times in a healthcare setting. That has been a real issue. And in the veterans benefit side, the regional offices, there has been a very strong move to contract out a fair amount of the work dealing with claims development, which some people will start saying, well, that's just great because we can get all these claims processed and veterans don't wait. But, again, it's sort of like, oh, well, we could build a lot of houses. Let's just pour very sorry foundations and have foundations that will not hold up once you start putting the weight on it. And I think that's where we're at with this developmental work, contracting out, that it is not going to be quality work. It is not going to be work that's developed where the VA understands its system from the time a veteran files a claim to the final process that somebody does an award for them. So I see that as going to really be a big hampering to veterans. And also I believe that it's wrong that it's inherently governmental work and that it should be done by government employees. And it actually costs less money to the taxpayers to do it in-house.
How do initiatives like contracting out, downgrading an employee's job description, how do they contribute to the morale at an agency?
It lowers morale. I mean, everyone, no one wants to lose a job. Also, no one wants to be involved with an organization that's not doing its best work. So it affects morale. It affects employees. And any time you have lowered morale in an organization, the eventual output and the eventual quality of the work is going to be affected. I see that in AFGE. I see it in every organization that I've ever been a part of. Having a high morale is always good to the end product that you're providing for the people that you're serving.
As we close out here, what's the latest with the fight to secure collective bargaining rights for all VA workers?
And I know that you're referring to some Title 38 professional employees, which are the registered nurses and physicians, physician assistants, and a few others in the VA. That legislation has been passed out of committee in the Senate. We were very, very pleased with Chairman Murray's leadership, and she's passed that out of the committee. It is now before the full Senate. We do believe that it will eventually come for a vote in the full Senate. There's a companion piece of legislation in the House that has not moved this year. And the basic gist of this legislation says that the VA will live with its own regulations. Regulations and rules they get to write, they get to change without bargaining with the union, and all that it requires is for them to live with that legislation. But VA has continued to refuse to live by their own regulations and rules that they write.
How optimistic are you that the change will be made and employees get the rights that they deserve?
I am optimistic that it will go through the Senate. I am not sure with the tone of the House and the legislation that we've been seeing move in the House that it will get through the House. There would always be a hope that it would be dealt with in conference with VA legislation. But I still have optimism, and I believe that there's legislation like this, as well as many other issues, why that AFGE members, as well as the entire American public, have to start getting very focused on the 2012 elections and start listening very carefully to what candidates are having to say and what they are meaning with their words. It's nice for people to proclaim they support veterans, but when you look at their voting record, they vote against ever appropriation for the VA. I don't believe they actually support veterans.
J. David Cox, AFGE National Secretary Treasurer. Come back and see us again soon.
Thank you very much, Jason. I hope you and everyone out there and all of our AFGE members have a very happy holiday season.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, AFGE Local 3258 member Mark Butler will highlight his book, The Coffee Break Guide for Veterans Seeking Federal Employment.
Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more, visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. Joined now by Mark Butler, a member of AFGE Local 3258, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Mark is the author of The Coffee Break Guide for Veterans Seeking Federal Employment. Mark, welcome to our program.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
So, Mark, tell us a little bit about this book that you wrote.
Well, what I attempted to do with this book was capture what I learned about getting hired from the private sector into to being a federal employee from the standpoint of a veteran and also as a disabled veteran, because there's so much of the regulations and trying to read it off of out of either the books or the website. As a veteran, you kind of get lost in what the meanings are, and so I said to myself, is there some way to get this word out to veterans who, you know, speaking their language and what they understand so that they can have a shortcut to learn what I had to learn the hard way.
Tell us a little bit about your career and what led you to ultimately write this book.
Well, I spent 30 years in the United States Navy, most of it in the Navy's nuclear power program. The last 10 years or so was in the Navy's Command Master Chief program, which is really a kind of a complex position, but it involves a lot of military human resources. After I got out, I went to work for a power plant in the private sector. The economy happened, and in January of 2008, I found myself unemployed and looking hard. And I started applying for jobs, and it's like, okay, what does this merit system mean? What does this delegated examining unit mean? And when does veterans' preference come into play? And how come I can't apply for this job? And why are there two announcements for the same position? And it was really confusing, but I made my way through, and I was hired in 2008 after about 6 months of unemployment by the Department of Housing and Urban Development under the Federal Career Intern Program, which has now been disbanded because a number of agencies couldn't figure out how to honor veterans' preference in that program. And then I was working on a graduate program, and applied for the Presidential Management Fellows Program and was picked up as a PMF and was offered a position in the Office of Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity. They offered me the position and didn't require any further thought. I accepted it on the spot because the person I was working for was a great manager, great person, and I said, there's opportunity here, and so I took it.
You mentioned that your job search came at a time, a unique time, right around the Great Recession. What was that like?
It was painful. I mean, I was spending probably on order of 10 to 12 hours a day between looking for jobs, sending out resumes, drafting cover letters, and sometimes engaging on 4 and 5 hour road trips just to get an interview. And I guess it being that the people out there hiring thought that, well, everyone's desperate for a job, so we don't have to be nice. You wouldn't even get a courtesy response. You wouldn't get notification that, hey, we have elected to go with someone else. I was watching my bank account go down. It was very frightening. I was worried about losing my house. It was just, I think it was a tough time, and I got to see a lot of that firsthand, and I think there's a number of people who have had the security of a job the whole time that don't realize just how frightening that can be.
Start off by taking us through the process of getting a federal job, something as simple as one might think as a federal resume. There are some intricacies there that you noted in your book. Share some of that with us.
Well, my private sector resume was 2 pages. And the more I dug into this and the more I've learned since coming on is that a federal resume is just so much longer. And I've kind of developed over time a thought process of how to write the federal resume. And I use a Navy acronym, which is SAR, which is Search and Rescue. And my words on this is situation, action, results. And the more of you can put into that out to about 5 or 6 pages, the better off you are. I didn't know that applying for the first job. And fortunately, someone liked what they saw in the write-up that I did provide, that they made me an offer. I guess getting back to the question again, it's you have to expand a lot more for a federal resume than you do in the private sector. And I think there's a lot of veterans out there that don't understand that.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think there's that need to expand on some of those things that you had done in the past?
I think the need to expand and my not knowing has to do with the transition assistance program that people who are departing the military get as a part of their out processing. Is that so much of the resume writing is focused on the private sector, where it's a page or two. And in the federal government, I think the HR specialists are looking for enough meat in order to meet all the requirements so they can say, yes, this person has the skills to do this job. And the more stuff you can put in there, and it needs to be meat and not just fluff, that gives the HR, the specialist, the person grading your resume, more opportunity to put more checks in the block and get you a better score and make you more competitive.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Mark Butler, member of AFGE Local 3258 and the author of The Coffee Break Guide for Veterans Seeking Federal Employment. Mark, talk to us a little bit about the federal job announcement and some things that applicants should be made aware of.
Talk about an announcement or a process that is in desperate need of revision. It seems like they almost have to spell out what the legal requirements are before they can make the announcement. And the best thing I could offer up to anyone is go through line by line, and I address this in my book where I said, this is what all this stuff means. And when you get down to the duties and responsibilities or what they're looking for in the position, you need to make sure that there are things in your past, which you've put in your resume, or how you answer questions on the job application that addresses the stuff that's in the job announcement so that your resume can be looked at by the HR person so that there's this match-up. The other part about announcements is that the veteran has to look is that, is this a merit systems where it's open to any federal employee or just the agency? If it's just the agency, then a veteran cannot apply. If it's more than the agency, then the veteran should apply for both the merit system but also the delegated examining unit. And some announcements will include that it's being co-announced. Others don't, so you have to look through all of USA Jobs to see that, hey, is it announced twice, and you should apply for both the internal and the external, because a hiring manager is going to select from one of those lists, and if you're not on both of them, then you're cutting yourself short.
Talk about the proper way to claim veterans' preference on a job application.
Well, the best way to do that is you indicate in your USA Jobs profile that you're a veteran. There's also documentation that you need to submit. Key on that is the DD-214, and that just gets you the veteran's preference, and it shows time you came in, time you got out, time served, which branch, and that's good. The other part about veteran's preference is that what I just described gives you the 5-point preference. To get a 10-point preference for being a disabled veteran, you also have to submit, it's an SF, I want to say it's SF-15, that, and you have to also have to provide a letter from the VA that shows that you have a disability. You do those two things, and those are documents that can be uploaded as a part of the application manager, that you get that in there so that it's identified that you are a disabled veteran or a veteran, depending on the category. And it goes in. And the feedback loop on this is when you get the announcement back or the what happened with the job announcement, you should see that they applied your veteran's preference. If they didn't, then it's time to start writing letters both to the HR folks and possibly your congressman, because if they didn't include your VA points or your veteran's preference points on an external job announcement or DEU announcement, then they're doing something wrong. Fortunately, I have not had that problem.
Okay, so once someone has identified a job that they're interested in, they've read through the announcement, they've tailored and submitted their resume appropriately, what about the job interview? Tell us about that.
The job interview, again, go to that SAR method. When you show up at the interview, first off, for military people, a lot of them use these patent leather shoes, what we call Corf Rams. They're nice and shiny and don't require a lot of labor. The veteran needs to lose those and get regular leather shoes and shine them up real good. The right fitting suit, generally a good white shirt with a red tie, nice standard interview uniform. Show up a little bit early, but not a lot, and if you're going to an interview at a federal facility, allow yourself an extra 20 minutes to get through security, because that's just a fact of life these days, is virtually every federal building has a security requirement. In the interview itself, take a copy of your resume so that you can give it to the people that are interviewing you, and again, use that SAR method, situation, action, results. If they just ask you to describe a situation, give it, here's the situation, here's the actions I took, here are some of the complications we encountered, this is how we overcame them, and here are the results. And that's a way to really sell yourself in an interview.
Aside from some of these things that you've mentioned in your book, Mark, what's one really good piece of advice that you would give someone who's looking to make that career change and move into the federal government?
Apply early and often. I would say I probably applied for no less than 100 jobs with the federal government. And you just have to apply for a lot, because there are so many people looking for a federal job, even with the pay freeze and the potential for more pay freezes. People are looking at it as like, if I can get in, I don't have to worry about, or at least too much worry about, getting laid off or getting downsized or looking for a job. And the federal government is still, I think, a model employer. this is how a lot of employers ought to be. And so the biggest advice I would give is apply often. Look at your job skills. Look at your, not just at what you've done, but what you're capable of doing, and expand your horizon somewhat. I did a lot of work in nuclear power. I did a lot of work in human resources. I never thought I would end up as a civil rights investigator working for HUD. But there were things in my past that enabled me to have the job skills necessary to apply for that job and get it.
How rewarding has it been for you to be a federal employee with the Department of Housing and Urban Development?
I think every job has its frustrations, and you know, any federal job is has that also. But the rewards far outweigh the frustration. The ability to investigate a complaint and work it to resolution, and in cases where there was discriminatory intent, to right a wrong. So much of what I did in the military was fixing things that were broke. Early on in my career, it was fixing equipment, and that's incredibly satisfying. Later on in my career with the Navy, it was fixing processes that were broke. And that's the most rewarding part about working as a civil rights investigator for HUD, is that I get cases where potentially there is something wrong, and if it is wrong, then I become a part of getting that fixed, and knowing that I can make life better for an American citizen that's paying taxes or is working here and living here, and make things better for them to where they're not being discriminated against. At the end of the day, that's the most rewarding part. It's just a thrill to do that.
Mark Butler, member of AFGE's Housing and Urban Development Local 3258 and author of The Coffee Break Guide for Veterans Seeking Federal Employment. Mark, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, it was a pleasure. You have a great day.
Thank you to our guests this week, AFGE National President John Gage, National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, and Local 3258 member Mark Butler. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more, visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab, or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.